The beginning of this year is going to be very, very interesting, because I'm going to show you something very fascinating. Okay, today is Monday, May 16th, 2011, and it's quite a day today with the news and with the recriminations and what should have been and what could be. And all I can tell you is I have two grandsons right out there in the field, one in the Golan Heights and one in the Shechem area. And both of them told my children, my daughter, and my son-in-law that they're not going to be able to call home this week. Anyway, I just want to comment that a young man from Chabad, let me just see if I can pronounce the last name, Nachum Shmayahu, and the last name is Zainatz, if I'm pronouncing it right. His father evidently is a big Talmud Chacham, Reb Shmuel Zainatz, and he's commenting on my shiurim. He's learning in Eretz Yisrael in a Chabad yeshiva, and I gather from the letter this is a real Chabadnik, a kid raised in a Chabad home, perhaps generations of Chabadniks, and he's writing to me about the Rebbe's attitude of Chachma Chisaniyot, and of course it wasn't as open as the Rebbe's. I just want to tell him that I believe the Rebbe always functioned on two levels. One level was for the masses, where he was a typical Haredi Rebbe, and another level for the intellectual giants who sought him out, where I think he was more open even than the Rebbe. And that's the way I view the Rebbe. As far as who is correct, I without going into great detail, and next year I hope to reach this and do a whole series of Sheyurim on reaching out to the big world. As far as who is correct, I will only quote the Tshuva of the Ramah to the Mashal at the start of Tshuva HaRamah, Machloket Yishanahi, so that there's no right and there's no wrong. He also quotes to me this wonderful Jew by the name of Rabbi Ari Khan, so I just want to mention that the Rabbi Ari Khan is my student, so I take a little bit credit for his great achievements. As far as the Rav, he comments on that I mentioned that to my mind the Lubavitcher Rebbe was one of the unbelievable Bekiyim of the generation, and so he comments to me that the Rebbe was always also had Harifot. So I just want to mention, yes, when you say, you see, when I compare the Rav to the Rebbe, so what struck me as a Talmud was the Rav's Harifot. What struck me with the Rebbe, when you can quote Tosfot by heart, line by line, and I saw the Rebbe do this many times, as if he's holding the Tosfot in front of him, so it's the Bekiyot that overwhelms you. But it doesn't mean the Rebbe wasn't a Baki, it doesn't mean that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wasn't a Charif. But the Seder, I can't do any better than the end of the Gemara in Bracha, Tzinei Be'er Charim Li Adif. And ultimately, it's the Sinai who's Adif. And the reason is, of course, very, very simple. A Chochmat Yisrael person, quoting from a Sunday class, would understand me very well. With Harifah, you can build many beautiful thoughts, but you have to have the sources properly. If you don't have the sources proper, you can build beautiful thoughts and then be all wrong. And you all understand with leaving wine in the refrigerator from Abdullah the Kiddush. It's a beautiful ayah. I still can't get over what came out of the class of a week ago. Now, the most important thing, and this should be of interest to the majority of you sitting here, because here you deal with the very heart of the Baal Tshuva movement. His father published the Kuntres. This is the young man's father. This is Reb Shmuel. And this Kuntres, Shelo Teitzei Meklal Ziyot Halel Shabbatot Kol Yomeya, Chilel alav Shabbat Echad Kidei Sheyishmor Shabbatot Harbei. And this Kuntres deals with the whole question that we've raised many times that I heard the Rav basically refuse to answer. Can you invite, to say it very bluntly, can you invite someone to your house Friday night if you know they're going to drive? Can you invite anyone to come daven? I began an Orthodox shul in Maplewood, 1962, the first rabbi of the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County, and we barely had a few Shomer Shabbos people. So it means every time you open the shul, you're going to have people riding or driving and parking a few blocks away, but nevertheless. Now, but this is an unbelievable question. With a shul, perhaps you can say, look, a shul has to function. You can't close the shul down. But can you invite people to your house Friday night? Can you? And I'll tell you what's beautiful about this contrast, that he quotes many shuvit who asa, quotes all of Reb Moshe, quotes Vinasha Klein, quotes them in detail. You don't have to look elsewhere. But he develops the whole idea that the whole concept of Piyut, which I, by the way, have in my new book in relation to Russian Jewry from a different vantage point. I don't want to go into more detail now. But the whole concept of better to be Mechalel Shabbos once so that the person will become a Shomer Shabbos all his life. And he develops it very beautifully. If there's a Lifnei Even, not a Lifnei Iva, Mesrei Lidei Avera, how to invite, how to tell them, can you tell them, please try to walk, should you tell them, or no, bring them in. And I have to say, it's a very convincing argument. Halacha l'maisa, it's hard for me, I have a lot of difficulty telling someone, invite someone to your house Friday night who's going to drive. You know, I would never invite anyone to my house Friday night who's going to drive. On the other hand, I understand his point very, very well. And I can only tell you, anyone here from Atlanta, Georgia? I was in Atlanta, Georgia, spent a few days there. If I'm not mistaken, it's from Atlanta, Georgia, that I got to see the paper clips and meet the people involved. And then I met them again in Washington, D.C. It's very, very interesting. But in Atlanta, Georgia, you have the big Orthodox shul, I think it's called Beth Jacob, the Rabbi Feldman Emanuel built it now. His son is there, and it's an Orthodox shul with a parking lot that's open on Shabbos. And they say that Rabbi Ruderman, I'm only repeating what I was taught, Rabbi Ruderman permitted them, and the whole idea was you don't want to turn anyone away, and the shul boasts, and I understand it's correct, that hundreds of people who originally drove the shul on Shabbos became Shomer Shabbos. And it's an interesting concept. So I want to tell the young man, he didn't leave me an address to write to him, but I want to tell the young man who contacted me, and I felt bad because I see he was calling me, like, you know, if I would call the Rav, I'd be shivering. I just want to tell everyone that if you call Alan Rekefet, don't shiver. He's a nobody or nothing. The only good thing about him is he saw Gedolei Yisrael and he taught Gedolei Yisrael. That much Rekefet deserves credit, but never shiver. And it was a bad moment. I had just come back from the hospital from my mother and I was I hadn't eaten since 11 o'clock. It was like 9 o'clock at night. So maybe my voice sounded awkward. So I want to apologize to him. And the Halavai should come one day to Shin. We should meet him. He learned some Kiyat Gat. Now, Adkan. Interesting food for thought for you who were not raised in the Torah world and became Balei Tshuva. Think about it, and if you wish, express an opinion to me. I'm curious to hear how you react. I have difficulty with it, but I have to say I was very impressed. He makes a very, very strong case, many sources. I never thought of it that way. See, in relation to Russian Jewry, before I came on the scene, Reb Chaim Drukman, they permitted our people to get the shul via the metro on Shabbat. And there was a way to do it where you didn't have to carry money, you could have a card, but whatever. It's a big, big keter. But the idea was you must do everything possible to help these Jews. And if you don't help them, they'll be lost. And by your going to shul, you create Jewish identity. It's the Chafetz Chaim Shita, that you could be Mechalel Shabbos to save Jews, or the Rav, the famous story with Yom Kippur, with Cuba, you know what I'm talking about? Where the Rav got the call and they can get these Jews out, but after Yom Kippur, and the Rav says, call me back in a half hour, and the person asking the question calls the Rav back in a half hour, you don't know, that's a famous story. And the Rav says, take them out even on Yom Kippur, and he says, Rebbe, pardon me, Why did you hesitate to answer me before? And the Rav told him, he called Reb Aaron Cutler to consult with Reb Aaron Cutler. Reb Aaron was even more forceful than the Rav. And from that story, excuse me?
When Castro
first came to power. But with the Rav and Reb Aaron, that story is very revealing because it's something I know from the family, that of all the Gedolim in America, the Rav was extremely close to Rabbanan Kotler. See, it's very interesting. With all the Gedolim in America, he was extremely close to Rabbanan Kotler. Okay, now, so what did we do last week? Last week we finished out the Em Habanim Smeicha, and I stress to you again that part where he talks about the Alsiyudin, the German dislike for Polish Jews, that is so powerful. And that's exactly Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik's approach. He spoke about it, Rakefet writes about it, quotes the Rav in Volume 2 of the Rav. And that's what I alluded to yesterday, that when we're in alien soil, we take on so much of the culture surrounding us. And the German Orthodox Jew, who was mitzvah in mitzvah, kalaka chamura, there's no question about it, the German Orthodox Jew, but that same German Orthodox Jew looked upon the Polish Jew as a barbarian, as uncultured. Looked upon a chassid, what do I have in common with him? And he represented the flowery civilization of Berlin. And you can see how his Torah values were compromised. His Torah values were cut down to size by his values as a German citizen. And we needed Eretz Yisrael desperately to bring us home, take us back, everything we spoke about yesterday. It's a very powerful part of the Em Habanim Smeicha. And I showed you, we need the strength. I quoted to you from Rabbi Moseson's book, Echoes of the Song of the Nightingale. And there's no question, the way he writes, could you imagine that you're not allowed, you shouldn't come in Aliyah, if you like the YU type of education, you can't find a replica in Eretz Yisrael. For that alone, you have to remain in America. If you're used to a certain standard of living, it's sakonet nefesha to come to Israel. Your standard will drop. And when you read the Em Habanim Smeicha, you get all the reasons in the world why not to pay attention to the late Rabbi Moseson. As I said to you, I could never understand how he wrote it, but when you take into consideration what happened to his daughter, she comes in Aliyah and joins this Reb Heschel Shachter's first cousin and joins the Meir Sharim crowd, and you have no idea how many Americans are in the Meir Sharim crowd, how many English speakers, and they live in a total unreal world. No one works, and they're Luftmenschen, and they survive. And Midachno learn in Torah, and they don't want to, and they speak Yiddish, not Hebrew, and it's a whole thrust. And here, her father, you understand, is furious at Israel, no YU education, no standard of living, etc. Now, I want to make one more point. And this point, I am very proud of. Why am I proud? A minute ago, I put Rakefet down, but now I want to put him up for one simple reason. Thanks to my students, I've always been ahead of the crowd. I've always responded to questions. And these questions open my mind. And I'll tell you, all this, by the way, what I'm about to tell you was in the book, in a chapter on the teaching of Torah, the art of teaching Torah. And I'll tell you two stories, true stories, and then tie it together. When I came in Aliyah in 1969, for the first time in my life, I'm working in a secular environment. I'm working for the Encyclopedia Judaica, and in our section, a young lady is working, Ruthie Berger, from Switzerland, to Bnei Brak, graduate of Beis Yaakov High School in Bnei Brak, and she speaks perfect English, and she's what's called a checker. You know what a checker means? My job was to edit or to write scholarship. Her job was to check that every source we quoted was correct and quoted properly. The encyclopedia had a check and balance system. So one day I couldn't contain myself, and I did something that's not right. And I said, Ruthie, forgive me, but I'm just curious. You went to Beis Yaakov. You have such a background. Bnei Brak. How did you throw Yiddishkeit away. Mechalalet Shabbos. She says, Dr. Rothkopf, you asked me a good question, and I'm going to give you an honest answer. I said, I only want an honest answer. And she tells me, she was in high school in Beis Yaakov, a very bright girl, and she was constantly asking questions. And one time the teacher says to her, Ruthie, kishetedi kola Torah kula tishali shelat, ad az sitmi etapeh. When you know the whole Torah, you'll ask questions. Until then, keep your mouth shut. She said, at that moment, my religion left me. Many decades later, I did something that I only did for my children. This student who got married had no father. Hitler, what Hitler did to the family, you know, the usual story. He was a real second generation only child with a tremendous amount of baggage. Father died young. So at his wedding, when he finally got married, I was his father. I walked into chuppah with his mother and turned around and was Masada Kedushin. After the wedding, I said to him, Jacques, what's the secret of our relationship? I was your Rebbe in the 60s. We're now in the, I believe it was the 90s. And we've remained close for so many decades. He says, Rebbe, I'm going to give you an honest answer. I say, Jack, I've heard that before. And he tells me the following little story. He was a very bright kid in yeshiva, Rav Shemsa Rafal here, Shimbroyas yeshiva. Came from Yekes, now Sasslerem. And he asked a lot of questions. One time the teacher barked at him, Jacques, when you know the whole Torah, you'll ask questions. Until then, keep your mouth shut. He says, Rebbe, you should know I wasn't putting on tefillin when my father wasn't looking. I was going into treif pizza places when my parents weren't around. And then I came into your shir, and he says, there's this young man sitting behind the desk. There's a picture of me in the new book at that age behind the desk in YU. And he said, you not only answered questions, you encouraged questions. And he says, I even remember when you said, look, I got to do my research. But you always came back with an answer, or if there wasn't an answer, you explained why there wasn't an answer. You gave me back my faith in Torah. So, you know, students ask questions. And I was way ahead of the pack. This has become an international institution today. In the early 70s, I developed an idea that we went like sheep to slaughter. All right. We lectured on that. The Rabbi Gershon Turetsky, who just came to visit me, told me he was overwhelmed by those shurim. He just heard them on the internet. All right? I dealt with it. We might have made a lot of mistakes. But among the religious Jews, there was unbelievable sanctity of life. Unbelievable Kiddush Hashem in the sense of Kiddush HaChayim. Gam ki eilech b'tzei tzalmavet lo yivira. And we have a lot to be proud of. And that's what I said. I'll give you examples in a minute. And I have to tell you today, if you know what I'm talking about. First of all, it led me to give a 5-year course in the Kollel, in the Sunday class. I was once introduced recently that I'm the greatest expert in the world in response to literature on the Holocaust. And I felt, oh my gosh, no one gives me credit for knowing Shas and Paiskim. I gave 5 years on that, so that's all I know. All right. It's the great Jewish historian, Ribbono Shel Olam. I spent so many years at the feet of the Rav. Right, I sinned. I got a doctorate. I have a Yetzer Hara for Torah history. Fine. But that's my main gestalt. But I can't win because the Rav called me. What's the difference? Doesn't matter. All right. Today you go to Yad Vashem. There's a whole division on religious Jews in the Holocaust and the Mesirat Nefesh. Go to B'nai Brak. There's a home museum already on the Mesirat Nefesh of religious Jews in the Holocaust. Now, I want to be honest. I'm not a fool. I'm alive at this moment in time. Even when you're alive, I have a lot of different Torah to say from the Rav and Rav Kook, etc. It's not for now. Gentlemen, I'm not a fool. Right before Pesach, a Talmud of mine, committed suicide. You all know. Religious Joe tells yeshiva graduate. In Staten Island, Rabbi Lehrfeld got an unbelievable call. I don't think any other rabbi that I know of got a call like this. Rabbi, I just killed my wife. Come over. Religious Jew, living around the corner, from, right or wrong, around the corner from being Israel. The New York papers had a field day with it. A week later, the Borough Park scandal, which I don't want to go. Remember what I said in class? Which is worse? A moment of you get angry, you commit a homicide. The Borough Park scandal? Imagine planning false testimony, paying people off, working for months to bring it to fruition, and all the time you're davening three times a day, and you're migating in a bekisha, mit a bod, mit a gato. So please, don't walk out of here saying that Rakefet said every religious Jew is a saint. God gave us the Torah. Who did he give it to? If not religious Jews. And in the Torah it says, lo titzach, lo tinaf, lo tenebereicha et sheka, all the sins that religious Jews do, occasionally, some, but not all. And that's the famous story that I write about in the Suvi era, where I quote Reb Shimon Wiesenthal. Never forget that story. That story says it all. What story am I talking about? When Reb Lazer Silber comes to the DP camp, right after World War II, and he's giving out money, they're building a shul, and he announces the dedication of the shul on Sunday, and the lay leader of that displaced persons camp, the famous Wiesenthal, who's not yet so famous, comes over to Reb Lazer Silber, says, I will not come to the dedication. I hate the chas from a yidden. I hate religious Jews. And Reb Lazer says, Shimon, vasi medai, what would you? Why are you so angry? And he tells Reb Silber the following story, that in the concentration camp where he was, he saw Jews waiting on line 12 midnight, to put on tefillin and say kriyshma. They took turns. One Jew had tefillin, smuggled in. And then he saw that the man who had the tefillin was charging each one a piece of bread for the right to put on tefillin. And he says to Reb Lazer, that's the way a Jew acts. And Reb Lazer, who was a genius of an individual, Kulo Torah, Reb Lazer says to him, Shimon, Shimon, you're a stupid man. What do you mean I'm stupid? I'm right or I'm wrong? He says, why do you look at the Jew who had the tefillin, who charged for the privilege? Look at the Jews who waited on line and were willing to give a piece of bread for the privilege of putting on tefillin. And Wiesenthal said, you taught me a lesson. There are two sides to every story. And the next day, he led the procession of the Achnasat Sefer Torah. So, I don't want you to walk out and say, Rakefet said every from Jew is a tzaddik. I'm not an idiot. Unfortunately, we know it's not so. Don't have to go any further than Munsee, where a Jew who led the fight against an Arab because of the Mishkanot Yaakov Shita went and sold treif chickens for years and years and years and years. And it was just caught by chance. It's shocking, shocking. And that Jew, everyone runs away there at Yisrael, where the year Hamiklat, he davens in my shul, I daven the 530 minyan, he davens the 630 minyan. The Gabbai, they don't give him an aliyah. So the Gabbai asked me, he claims he's a Baal Tshuva. I said, a Baal Tshuva? When he shows you receipts that he paid back the millions of dollars to everyone who had to throw out their dishes, their ovens, and what have you, and so much law, and dishwashers, when the money is paid back, then we can talk about doing Tshuva before God. But I think in Hilchot Tshuva, it's quite clear that when you cause monetary ruin, you have to make that up first before you can ask God for forgiveness for the sins. Now, we have in the Holocaust
with all this heartache, and just think for a minute, how would you act? How would you behave? No food, no drink, constantly hungry, slaving, working, you falter, you're shot, you're killed. The smell of the crematorium, that public hangings, those that are machine gunned down, those that fall on the electrified fences, what the Nazis did to us. It's beyond words. The world, the hatred today, it's beyond words. Beyond words, beyond comprehension. And yet, in this Gezel Mofet, there are unbelievable examples of Mesirat Nefesh. I hold in front of me, here is from Yad Vashem, a siddur that a Jew wrote by memory on scraps of paper in a concentration camp. And Jews took parts of it, passed it around to Davin. Here, here you have also on display in Yad Vashem a calendar that a Jew wrote by memory. A luach. They should know when Shabbos is, they should know when Yom Tov is. The bottom of the page is Mesechet Brachot that a Jew with a photographic memory wrote in the concentration camp, and the few that still had a mind to learn at least could occasionally look at a Daf Gemara. And that, of course, is the famous story of Professor Halivni Weiss. I trust you recognize the name. And Professor Halivni Weiss, who is a gone idea, should live and be well. Excuse me, his son studied right here in this kollel, Ephraim Halivni. And Professor Halivni Weiss, the whole Holocaust, the man who knew Shas by heart, had such bekir, all he had was one page from the Shulchan Aruch that he kept with him, that was his lodestar. Whenever he could look at a page of Chazal, that was his lodestar. And I mean, the stories are unbelievable.
You know how he got it?
How did he get it?
Apparently, I remember his one of the biographies.
Right, right.
A German soldier had a sandwich wrapped in a paper.
Wrapped in a paper,
he
right.
He discarded the paper and he picked it up.
And he picked up that paper, and that paper turned out to be. So I can tell you a similar story with Yosef and Tzadik Mendelovich. You know, I remain, Yosef just called me the other day. We've remained very close until today. I had the schut when he came out in early 81, the first time he spoke in public in Israel was in Heichal Shlomo to a Mizrahi women's group, I think it was Emuna from Canada, and he spoke in Hebrew, and I translated into English. And when he introduced him, I spoke of Akedat Yitzchak, and he got angry at me. You know, he said, no, you know, I didn't suffer like that. But let me tell you one little story with Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik, in prison already, refused to eat chametz on Pesach. So the authorities knew that he meant it, and he would rather starve to death than eat chametz. Now, Yosef was well known in the West already, which gave him a certain amount of protection. You should know that one of the things we accomplished with sending in shlichim, like you, like myself, whenever we came out, we brought out names, we brought out pictures occasionally. That made them well known. Yosef was well known. People had visited him in the late 60s in Riga, took his picture. So he had a certain amount of protection. So the KGB made it their business to go to the Dutch embassy that represented Israel's interests because they broke relations with Israel in 67, and they would get a kilo of matzah for him.
every year they'd get the kilo of matzah and they would take off the wrapping. He shouldn't see the Hebrew letters. One year, the matzah came very late. There was a fashla. And the KGB forgot to rip off the wrapping. And Yosef and Sadek kept this wrapping with Hebrew letters, Aviv Matzah, Petach Tikva. It was, he told me, his most precious possession to the day he was released. So you have a very similar story to Professor Halivni Weiss and what he went through. I'll only add a postscript that with all the animosity that develops in later years between Rav Hutner and Yeshiva University, and the stories are legendary. If one day you could get Rabbi Lichtenstein to open up, you would find it very, very enlightening. Baron was a Talmud of both of Yitzchak Kutna and both, of course, Moreno Rabbeinu Rav Soloveitchik. And it's an interesting, the relationship and the Baron's wedding and what happened that day. It's like a Hasidic tale. So, but I gotta say, I have, after I read Rav Halivni's autobiography, I had new respect for Rabbi Hutner. Because when Halivni Weiss arrived in America, here was this poor kid, no relatives in the world, and it's a gewaltig, you know, what should he do, where should he go? And evidently the first yeshiva he came to, Lavriyot, was Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. And here he meets Rav Hutner, Rav Hutner sees this young man, what a memory, what a mind, what learning. And Shabbos, they take a look, he barely has clothes, the same poor clothes he's wearing during the week, he's wearing in Shabbos. And Rav Hutner took him out to a men's shop and bought him his first suit that he owned in the United States. And I found that very moving. And my attitude towards Rav Hutner went up a number of degrees as a result of that story. Don't get me started, gentlemen, let's come back here. My mind is already dancing in front of me. I'm laughing because nothing compares to one story in my new book, but you fellas won't even start to appreciate it. You know what story I'm talking about, Nachum? Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik and Rav Hutner. Remember, did I tell you that? I told your father. I mean, we Mendel, you remember the story?
I heard it online.
You heard it online. Oh, my God. Danny, you know it? No, you don't. I'll tell this, take off 3 minutes and tell the story. Gentlemen, Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik, when I learned in YU, there were two rabbis, the Rav and Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik. No one else was colorful. It's not like today. You have Rav Shechter, you have Rav Twesky, you have Rav Rosenzweig, you have Rav Blau, you have Rabbi David Millenow, etc., etc. In my days, just two rabbis that made the news. So one time, we're in Rabbi Ruchin, and you imagine the right-wing claims today, Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik never taught in YU. So one time in class, someone quoted Rabbi Shutat the Belkin, Rabbi Belkin, the president of the Rosh Yeshiva, the president of the Yeshiva, in Rabbi Ruchin Relic's class. Rabbi Ruchin gets hysterical. Belkin, Schmelkin, was das ist gebeut, was ist gar nicht getan, he's going crazy. Belkin did not. Wer hat ja ist gebeut in Tyre in America? Who did build Tyre in America? Oh, Rabbi Yitzchak Kutni's praising him to the sky. All right. We walk out of class. Nachum's father might have been in the same class with me. We walk out of class. And you know, we knew Rav Gerelik hated YU. He had a love-hate relationship. He never made his peace with YU. And all right, he loves Rav Hutner. Fine, big deal. A few weeks later, an innocent kid in class quotes, and you know, the chasm between the right and the left was not like it is today. There was cross-pollinization, because in YU we knew what was going on in Torah Vedas, Chaim Berlin, Torah Vedas, what was going on in YU. Sometimes students went back and forth, mainly coming to YU from those places, but we had cross-pollinization. So one time a kid in class very innocently quotes
Rav Hutner's Sikha before Pesach, perhaps, or before Purim, Rav Gorelick goes crazy. Was that? Mit der Zeta, das ist ja agonisch, an euch war fertig, start spitting and jumping and the world is going crazy. So we walk out of class and we held a little conference. You know, many of us were Bronx boys. We lived near Rav Gorelick, the heart of the East Bronx, Mount Eden area. You can't walk there by day today, but in those days it was all Jewish. And we figured, you know, we got to find out what's going on. This is unbelievable. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Rav Hutner was the Gadol Hadav, Dalton was agonished. And 3 weeks later, Rav Hutner is in Chayrim 50 times over. So we figured we'll go to Rav Yeruchim Gorelick's shul on Shabbos afternoon. And we'll ask him, between Mitchan Marv, he was more relaxed. So we will ask him. So he said, Rebbe, what went on? With a few weeks ago, Rav Gorelick was Rav Hutner was the Gadol Hadar, and this week the Rebbe had gemacht from him Aschenblatter. You beat the hell out of him. So we found out the story. His eldest son, Rav Chaim Weiss, was no longer alive. He's had yeshiva in Fallsburg in upstate New York, in the mountains. So Rav Chaim Moshe reached high school age. Every other Rebbe from the old Mir, from the Shanghai crowd, sent their kids to YU, Rav Fishman, Rav Bornstein. But Rav Gorelick couldn't send his kid to YU. That would be a tragedy. So he looked around for what yeshiva. And he went out to Brooklyn. He went here, he went there, went to Torah Vedasa. He loved Chaim Berlin. And he decided that's the place for his son. So he had to make an appointment now with Rabbi Hutner to get the kid in. So he makes the appointment. He goes to see Rabbi Hutner. Everything is arranged to get the kid in. And he's walking out of the office. No, he reaches the door. The Gabbai sitting at the door says to Rabbi Yeruchim, Azei geit min ha'arois from the Rosh Yeshiva. Vazim etaych. That's the way you walk out. With your back to the Rosh Yeshiva, what's with you? And he turns him around and forces him to go back in and walk out backwards. Like we have a minute by the Kotel HaMaravi for Dalet Amud, we walk with our face to the Kotel. That's the way. Oh boy. Gentlemen, I don't have to comment one syllable. That's all Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick needed, and that was the end of Chaim Berlin, and the end of Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner, and Shpai Pai. Wow, you take a Radna, a Briska, and you make him walk out backwards like a Hasidic Rebbe. Oh my, in 1 minute, we understand. See if your father remembers that.
My father, and he turned around and went right back to what you...
What do you mean happened to your father?
Fine, to Chaim Berlin. And they told him to walk out backwards.
Your father went to Chaim Berlin?
He was in Camp Morris.
So. Oh, he was in Camp Morris, and they told him to walk out backwards. Oh, my gosh. Gentlemen, dear students, nowhere was this displayed more importantly, more concisely, than in the Responsa literature. And already in the early 70s, I called attention. I didn't know what I later would develop and later research. I certainly didn't know 5 years' worth of responsa literature. But there's no doubt in my mind that this literature is absolutely precious, because the questions that people could ask, that people were concerned with, and I just run a few examples past you, but all of you know you can pick it up on the website and really study it in detail. Imagine you get a job in the kitchen. You're cooking. Getting a job in the kitchen is the greatest job to have when you're in a concentration camp, because you have access to food. In the Israeli army, my grandsons are unhappy when they're on KP duty, but I always tell them, what are you complaining about? You have so much food there, you can eat to your heart's desire. But the problem is that in the Israeli army, everyone can eat to their heart's desire. Baruch Hashem, there's no lack of food. So the only time there's a problem is obviously on a battlefield where you're moving forward quickly. Not always will the logistics keep up with you. And that's that. Then, you know, with you never saw a battlefield, but what's fascinating about a battlefield, you have your frontline troops, right, that are mamish in battle. Right behind them, you have a world of supply material. Not only do you have a field hospital and ambulances, but you have water trucks, you follow? You have food trucks. You have a world of logistics right behind the front lines. But normally, under normal conditions, there's no reason why everyone in the army should not have a feast. But imagine you work in a kitchen. So what's the problem? You work in a kitchen. Aye, but you have to cook, trade food. You have to cook on Shabbos. Right now, we just went into a concentration camp for all I know. All of us are healthy. Ah, but if you don't eat properly, a month from now, you're going to be very sick. Don't you carry bottles of water with you when the weather gets warm and you're walking in Yerushalayim, you don't want to dehydrate? I always wear a hat. Why do I wear a hat? Because four times over the 42 years I'm here, I fainted from heat, or I feel very cold and it's not good for me. I always wear a hat. In the winter, a warm hat with ear laps. I don't care. People laugh at me. No, someone's angry and laugh all you want. You don't like the hat I wear, the Chafetz Chaim wore the same hat, the Chaim Brisker wore the same hat, doesn't matter. And the summer I wear a baseball cap, but I carry water with me now. I'm older, I have to drink more, you have to lubricate the body. So they asked the Shaila, are we allowed to take a job in the kitchen where we will be Mechalel Shabbos, where we will cook treif, but at least we will be secure. And it's not bikuach nefesh right now, but it'll be bikuach nefesh in a few weeks. And of course, the very fact they answered the question, the answer is obviously yes, that this is what bikuach nefesh is all about. If someone is ill and he can't fast in Yom Kippur, the doctor, the person who's going to paskin, is not going to ask the doctor, tell me, will he drop dead right away on Yom Kippur? No, he's going to ask him, will the fact that he won't take food weaken his body so that it will have bad results 2, 3, 4, 5 days from now? And that's one example. I'll give you another example. Birchat HaGomel is a very, very poignant issue. Imagine you survive the selection. So the person is overjoyed. He survived. Everyone else taken away. He and his friends survive. Do you say Birchat HaGomel? Remember, in next 2 weeks' time, there's going to be a selection again. And this is a very serious question. You come out of the hospital and you say Birchat HaGomel. What do you mean you come out of the hospital? What, you're not going to be sick again? You're going to live forever? So you see, Birchat HaGomel has to be measured within the context of where the question is being asked. When you come out of the hospital, of course we say Birchat HaGomel. When we come back from a big trip and we've flown all over the world, of course we say Birchat HaGomel. You're going to fly again, you're going to be sick again, you're going to be hospitalized again, but this is Minhag HaOlam. But where there's selection on top of selection, it may very well be you don't make a Birchat HaGomel because the sakana has not passed. You're alive now, but they can shoot you at any minute. In 2 weeks more time, there'll be another selection. Once again, the fact that they asked the question shows Kedushat HaChayim. Who can live on this level? Kol HaKavod to these Jews. Yes, yes, Nachum.
You say Gomel, really, the only reason you survive is because they picked other people.
I understand that also, that other, but you survive. When you come out of the hospital, so you were in a room, two other people died, and you're walking out.
It was because of you that they died.
What do you mean, because of you?
So what if you're in a car accident, you fall on someone else, they break your fall? Right, you would say not to say Gomel.
No. That's a one-time
thing.
To say the fact that others died, but you're alive, that's the Shaila, but the Psak was not the Seha Gomel, because it's a Shat Sakana. Of course, there's the classic question, we spent so many months on this. No? you read all the literature today, Yom HaShoah, all the memoir literature comes to the surface, are you allowed to take a Tudat Zehut, that you're a guy? You have blonde hair? Do you have blue eyes too yet? I don't know. Sort of blue eyes, that's what I see from here, but I don't depend upon my eyesight now before another cataract operation. No, you look like a guy. You take a Tudat Zehut, it says you're a Polish Catholic. Are you allowed? And this is mamish to save lives. Are you allowed to put a kid in a monastery? There was a general in the Israeli army, I believe his name is Uriar. He was raised in a monastery. He didn't find out he was Jewish until something like an early teenager. Someone came and reclaimed him, and he didn't want to leave. There are endless stories like this. And these questions were asked time and time again. What about the ghetto, Labriot? What about the ghetto? I mean, it's overwhelming, these questions. What about the ghetto, where every few weeks the ghetto becomes smaller? Every time there's a selección, the ghetto becomes smaller. They move you down, move you into a new location. You don't have a mezuzah. Are you obligated to go seek a mezuzah? You're only going to be there 2 weeks. Who knows what will happen 2 weeks later? So, of course, in Chutz Laaretz, you have to live in something 30 days to be chayiv in mezuzah. It's called the Dirat Arayi in Tuvan. But the very fact that they ask this question shows, wow, what Mesirat Nefesh, what decency, what religious feeling. What about the famous question that Rabbi Chaim Meshi was asked, what is the Nusach for Kiddush Hashem, the bracha we all know, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu likro et ha'halel, with the lamed, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu lishmoa kol shofar, with the lamed, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu la'asok, with the lamed b'divrei Torah. Then we have other bracha, v'tzivanu al ha'halel. Ashek Zivano al Sfira Ta'ome, right or wrong. You have to Ashek Zivano al Nitila Jadayim. No, al Ahalel is wrong, would be the crow at the Halel. Although, excuse me? Oh, there the Machlokes is Likron Likmai. Now I confused the Machlokes. Yeah, I'm all aware of it. Toysfus.
Also,
So we say Lasok with the Great Torah. I know in the Beis Yosef, if I recall, we already brings down a different Nusach. But you see, there are two different Yiskot of Bracha. Now, so much has been written. Al Bir Chametz. You follow? Al Achilat Matzah. Al Achilat Marah. So much. It's a Sugyan Psachim. If I recall correctly, it's the first paragraph of Psachim. A lot has been written on this question. But imagine someone came to Rabbi Ephraim Ashri, what bracha do we make? Al Kiddush Hashem or Lekadesh et Shmo Berabim? And this was the question that they asked. That's what troubled them. That's what bothered them. And he paskin lahalacha, according to the Shlach HaKodesh, Asher Kiddushanu b'tzivanu tzivanu l'kadesh shmo b'rabim. And Rabbi Ephraim Mushri later learned that the person who asked the question was killed al Kiddush Hashem and made the bracha before he was killed. And I give you another question, which again, this comes up in the memoir literature. All the Nazis had to find was a shul. Jews davening, Jews learning. Do you have to put your life in danger to daven with a minyan, to hear Kriyat HaTorah, to sit in a Mishnayot class or an Ein Yaakov class? Again, this question came up. What a question. And here there's no black and white answer, because al pi halacha, you understand very well that One can be a good Jew and never daven with a minyan. He lives in a place where there's no minyan. He travels all the time. All right, it's not like today. Today on every airplane, you can make your own minyan in Al Al, in other airlines, they're already geared for it. You know what happened with the kid putting on tefillin, the MTA boy, but today people know and what a minyan is, what tefillin are because of that incident. But are you required to put your life in danger? Absolutely not. On the other hand, for a good Jew, what is life worth if you can't have a minyan, if you can't hear Kriyat HaTorah, if you can't learn a Perek Mishnayot? And the truth is that in the ghetto, under those conditions, you needed this to give you encouragement, to give you a good feeling, to give you a goal, to give you contentment. And Allah halacha, each one had to do their thing. And there's endless memoir literature that particularly on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, no matter where the Jews were, they made minyanim and saw to it that they davened. And then, of course, the questions that come after the Holocaust, a Jew feigned Christianity, he returns to his people, can you count them to minyan? A Jew returns Christianity, can he duchen? Can you accept them as a kohen? And the most famous question of all that turned out happened so many times and played an interesting role in the state of Israel. Imagine if you're in a bunker and the Nazis are searching the bunker and a little kid, an infant, is crying. And those tears will give everyone away. Can you smother the kid and kill him to save the lives of all the people? You follow the Shaila here? Does that kid have a din of a rodef? And he's crying innocently. And this question came up so many times. And there was a famous story in Haifa where a family, I remember in the early 70s, my early years in Israel, a family who had smothered a child in a bunker dedicated a Sefer Torah in his memory. And I'll never forget how they now said for the first time they feel closure, that what they had to do, they had to do, they had to save everyone in the bunker. But now there's a Sefer Torah in this little boy's memory. And finally, I don't have to go any further, the question, did it happen, didn't it happen? So much has been written, so much has been analyzed, so many scholars have dealt with it. And I recall that Rakefet went back and forth giving all the sources, but it doesn't really matter whether it did happen or didn't happen, because Klal Yisrael believed it could have happened. And that, of course, the 93 Beis Yaakov girls, when you think for a moment that these girls had the cyanide pills and killed themselves rather than let the Gestapo visit them. And I can tell you, Michael, in my Shabbat where they Provo, where they tried me out for Lower Merion Synagogue, and I believe Sunday that year was Tisha B'Av. So I think one of the good points they saw about Rothkopf was that when I spoke about the keynote, I suggested adding reading the Tzava'ah of the Tzadikim, daughters of Beis Yaakov, and I read it, translated it into English, and asked them to say Kaddish in their memory. And that was a positive point about Rothkopf. There were negative points too, but at least for the time being, the positive points went out. So let me reiterate and let me summarize what I've said so far today, because in 1 second I'm shifting gears, moving sideways into an extremely important topic, which will carry us into next year, and where I have sources to show you, not immediately, but that may change your entire life as a human being, as a Jew, as a teacher of Torah, as a machaneich. I'm going to show you sources that will help you throughout life. But What have we said so far today? No question, the Holocaust and all its implications, and so much has been written, so much memorialized, but one theme that I responded to students already in the early 70s, that we religious Jews among us, I can't say all, I don't want to be a fool, particularly after what we have seen in the last few years of sins among religious Jews, I shiver, I shake. And it's across the board, in the Haredi world, the Dati world. The guy who killed his wife in Staten Island belonged to Young Israel. The guys in Baripok belonged to Chassidish guys. Right across the board. I don't have to tell you, in Israel, we have certain problems, that God have mercy if the accusations are true. And believe me, I shiver and shake for fear they are true. My family is directly, directly affected. But there were Jews of tremendous stature. To write a siddur, to write the Gemara, to write a calendar from memory, what an achievement. What a story with Halivni Weiss, with that paper. I believe it was Shulchan Aruch Ebenezer, you can correct me, but he had one paper that he had gotten from that Gestapo sandwich in Mach Shmam V'Zichram. The Shelet and Shuvit that came out of the Holocaust. It's today, everyone is teaching it. Everyone picked up on what I had the privilege of being, the Nachshon Ben Aminadav, back in the early 70s. But it was in direct response to questions that students asked me. And if I let me just remind you that the last 5 years, 6 years, what I've been teaching, how did it begin? It all began Hanukkah 1971 in Machon Gold. I was now teaching full time. The encyclopedia was over. I turned down all the offers to remain a staff editor, and I'm working for the Torah Culture Department of Jewish Agency. All this doesn't exist today, and in addition to BMT, they have me teaching Machon Gold, which is a parallel school, a sister school to BMT. And in Hanukkah of 1971, the girls said to me, Rebbe, we have problems we want to discuss with you. So I met with a few girls. It was a very brilliant class of 31 girls. If you know Rabbi Aaron Adler, the rabbi of Ohel Nechama, his wife was in that class, Miriam. So I met with a few of the girls in the teacher's room. And they said, you know, we have wonderful teachers here. We have Professor Nechama Leiber, which we have this one, that one. But no one answers our basic questions. I said, what are your questions? You know what? Next class, I'm going to give out 31 sheets of paper. Don't write your names, write your questions. And I collated it and developed a course that I developed and developed and developed and polished, and it goes on until today with hundreds and hundreds of lectures that I have. One man's attempt to be a Torah Jew in the modern world. And these were among the questions were, of course, the Holocaust. Most of those girls were second-generation girls. It was many years later till I finally got third-generation students. And it was a real reality. I need not tell you the question of Zionism. One of my grandsons just told me the following story, that a friend of his, a paratrooper, was walking in Meir Shearim a few days ago. And this kid has a beard and payas and it sits it sticking out. And the people jumped on him and Meir Shearim, what kind of apikoros are you? How can you serve in the Israeli army? So I told him, what did your friend answer them? He said, no, he walked away, he didn't want to get into a fight. And why didn't you answer this and that? So my grandson cuts me off and he says, Saba, you know how to answer these people. We don't want to get into a fight. We walked away. I said, Chaval, if I had been there, let me tell you, the answers would have flown. But you see, Zionism presents a tremendous question. People come over to me right here in this building and they talk in attitude towards the state of Israel. Idiot! What's the state of Israel? It's me. It's you. It's the other guy. It's us. Who are you talking about? The state represents us. We. Here. Now. Boy, has the state changed since I came in Aliyah. Who would ever dream they would delay Yom HaZikaron because of Chilul Shabbos? Who would ever dream that they want to delay Lag BaOmer because of Chilul Shabbos? It's an entirely different state today. The former head of the Supreme Court, Aaron Barak, just the other day at a conference, called the laws of Kippa V'Kedushin the most anti-democratic laws that exist in any democracy in the world. I'm paraphrasing him. And no one said boo. They laughed at the idiot. Moron, where you living? Who's here in the country? What do you want to do to the Jewish people? You're asking me about the Jewish state? Ask me about yourself. What you have to do in this beautiful country you live to make it better. And of course, the questions are myriad. Who built the country? Second Aliyah, you didn't see a kippah, you didn't see religious Jew. 1904, 1914, that's when all the leaders came, the Great Rebellion. All of them raised in Frum homes, David Ben-Gurion, Golda Meir. Great Rebellion, throw it out, get rid of it. Shazar, later in life, some of them came back, B'lei V'nefesh, Yitzchak Ben Tzvi, I believe was a Shomer Shabbos all his life. Sokolov was a Shomer Shabbos all his life. David Wilson was a Shomer Shabbos. Second president of the World Zionist Organization. How can it be? Theodor Herzl, Azar Sheikitz, Azar Ofer, what did he know about Judaism? So assimilated. How come Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook worshipped the ground that Herzl walked on? These are fabulous questions. But they're fabulous answers. The answers are infinitely more powerful than the questions. I never forget the Rambam I quoted to you. Hilchot Malachim Perek Yud Bet Halacha Bet. There's so much confusion in Chazal about how the ultimate redemption will happen that only an idiot will try to figure it out. Tipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. And I showed you that the Malbim had the chutzpah, remember Sefer Daniel, to figure out when the redemption will come, and he wasn't far off with the Zionists in the state, and they jumped on the Malbim. Who gave you permission? Tipach Rucham, how do you do a thing like this? Remember, I gave you the Malbim's answer. Rambam Smecha quotes it all. But these are real questions. And believe me, we have to know how to deal with it. In dignity, in Yirat Shemayim, in love, and understanding. And let me begin. And I tell you in advance, these questions and these lectures will carry through to next year. It's Rakhanotainly of Kohar. Okay. First of all, Zionism is as old as Churban HaBayit. Now what do I mean by that? The minute there was destruction, and I mean, what does it mean, destruction? The temple destroyed, our sanctuary destroyed, the blood of our life system, everything destroyed. Tisha B'Av, Churban Bayit Rishon, Churban Bayit Sheni. The minute there was Churban Bayit Sheni, the Jew dreamed of returning. We never, ever gave up the vision of coming back. There's a famous Yerushalmi, the Rebbe always quoted this, I'm quoting from Perek Sheni in Brachot. Let me see if I can give you an exact, because Yerushalmi is very difficult to quote because there's so many different editions. Perek Sheni, in subdivision Dalet, what we call Halakha Dalet, in the standard edition of the Yerushalmi, Perek Yud Zayin Amud Yud Zayin Amud Aleph and Yud Zayin Amud Bet. And the Yerushalmi in Galilean Aramaic tells the following story. I'll translate it to Hebrew in a moment. I want to just say it in the Galilean Aramaic. So if you look it up, you'll find it right away. Ka'im redi, na'a turatei kumei, oda chad, aravi, v'shamakala, Amala Bayudi Bayudi Shari Turek Vishari Kan Keik Daha Khariv Beit Mikdashek.
What does it mean in simple English? A Jew, a farmer, what Jews originally were, what Jews have become today, the greatest farmers in the world, actually. Jew was working his farm, plowing the land. In the middle of plowing, his cow let out a tremendous shout, a tremendous yell. He didn't know what that meant. And an Arab was walking by, Aravi, interesting. And the Arab says, Jew, Jew, stop what you're doing, you're wasting your time. Your temple has been destroyed. Fine. The Jew stopped. A moment later, the animal made a tremendous noise again. And the Arab told him, Bai you die, bai you die, katark to reich, katark an kaneir, daha yalid, malka the Mashiach. Jew, start plowing again. Your Messiah has been born. And that's the Yerushalmi. Now what does it mean? From the moment it was Churban HaBayit, we had this dream to return. And the Rav said so beautifully, what do we say in the Vidui on Yom Kippur? Aval anachnu v'avoteinu chatanu. Anachnu v'avoteinu chatanu. That gives you the right to talk about your father that way. Bayi Shalom. Shmuel, so you sin occasionally. Keep it up, Yain. You're going to blacken your father's face. Your father's a sinner. Chutzpah. Aval anachnu v'avoteinu chatanu. Slachwanu avinu. What's going on here? And the Rav said so beautifully. I don't know if it originates with him. I've seen other dasharim. You know, many times the Rav citing his, he already amalgamated into his own dashanut that he heard from others. But you know, the Rav, when he came to Warsaw, the Rav always said that his going to Warsaw was the dominant feature in his dashanut ability. That in Warsaw he heard the great rabbanim, the great dashanim. And that's how we learned how to preach. And boy, was he a dasher. So, the Rav explained, it's based upon this Gemara in Yerushalmi, any generation that doesn't rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, something went wrong with the generation. Aval anachnu avoteinu chatanu, that our fathers, our grandfathers, our ancestors, didn't rebuild the Beis HaMikdash in their time. And this is the concept. We constantly had that dream. Gentlemen, so far, very nice. But it's drush. David Potter was saying, Rebbe, that's drush. Give me something more solid. He's a halachist.
Please,
a halachist, if I'm pronouncing it right. He wants Mendel something more solid. Gentlemen, believe me, I have something more solid. I had many shrink from the Rebbe. By the way, part of this has been published. I believe Reb Heschel Schechter published it from the Chapades. I'll tell you what I'm referring to. David Berger, do me a favor, I want to speak to you after class, so don't forget to look at my crooked nose up close. David Chapades, see, I'll tell you about the Rebbe. Let me be honest with you. Baruch Hashem. I got a hechsher from Baron Lichtenstein. Some of you heard it with your own ears. Right or wrong, Danny? You didn't hear with your own ears, did you? David, were you there?
Yeah.
Ah, so you can certify I got a hechsher on my... Reb Chaim Soloveitchik also said my... Baruch Hashem. It's not that my books are so good, but it's after 11, 12 years, they've seen what else has come out from the Rebbe. And boy, has that pushed the value of my two volumes up. Take my word for it. And what I have coming out now, you'll see. Perfection. So I know the Rav. So you see, the Rav, he was a brisk, he was a perfectionist.
He was always afraid to publish. Someone's going to find fault. Someone's going to criticize. Always had this hesitancy, which we suffer from until today, because all he published was basically philosophical concepts. Philosophy, you can be right, you can be wrong, there's never truth. That he didn't mind publishing. But the Chiddush Torah, there he was hesitant. So one of his famous Yahrzeit Shurim in the 40s, in memory of his father, was on Kiddush HaChodesh. So what happened would be, in Hapades, the rabbinic journal, don't say it too loud and don't let the recording pick it up, he gave HaRav Pades the manuscript, and Rav Pades would publish it that this is what he heard the Rav say. You follow me? It's not that the Rav signed his name. Rav, look into the So I have all the original Pades in my, I sought them out and I Xeroxed them, and then after this surgery, I learned from the Rav in Sanhedrin in class. And we heard the same Torah. But Rav Heschel did the world a big favor in the latest, the Divrei HaRav. He published all that exists in Apades. I believe this is in there as well. And I believe if it's not in there, then it's certainly in the collection that the Jewish Agency put out. It's fabulous Torah. When you look at it originally, it's not the Rav. It's HaRav David HaLevi Pades. Well, I think his name is Rav David, but check me out. He was a Rav in Chicago, and the Rav liked him, evidently. And the Rav fed him material, but on condition, nisht in my namen, not my name. You heard, you wrote down. Fine. You protect yourself that way. That way, if anyone criticizes, you misinterpreted, you're this, you're that, you're not correct, Sashvara Rambam. So you can say, no, it's not me, it's HaRav Pades who published it. So you all know that Kiddush HaChodesh, originally we had a calendar that was totally based upon live testimony. The testimony had to be given in Beit Jazek, in Yerushalayim. The Sanhedrin had to declare a new year, a new month, a new calendar, an Ibiyar, a Shanamu Beret. Everything was in the hands of live, living people. This is basic to Yiddishkeit, basic to Masechet Rosh Hashanah, basic to Masechet Sanhedrin. And then we were heading for Churban Bayit, and all of this would be gone. No Sanhedrin, no Musmachim, no Rabbanim Ishmi Piyish with the real Smicha. And what's going to happen? The calendar's going to disappear? So we all know at a certain point Chazal sat down and put in a permanent calendar, and they were makadish that calendar la'atid lavo ad biyat mashiach tzidkenu ad va'ad b'klal. And that's how we live today. And we just spoke in the concentration camps how they could work out a calendar from memory. You don't have to have Eidim, you don't have to have a Sanhedrin. And all of us know, every year, a calendar is printed. Who gave the OU permission to print the yearly calendar? Who gave Manischewitz permission? Who gave all these kinds? We all know. I have a calendar beginning with the 1900 going to 2000, and now I have a calendar going to a book going to 2050. I can check every date. So you look into the Rambam, Sefer Mitzvah, I'll give you the source in a moment. And the Rambam indicates that you can have a calendar, but that calendar, the Kiddush HaChodesh, everything that Chazal did, everything that Chazal set in motion, is only Chal, how do you say that in English? It only has substance, it only transpires, it only takes place if there's a minion of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Without the Yishuv, the calendar is gone. Gentlemen, do you start to understand the implications? If Chas v'Chalila, our enemies would have driven us out, and there would not remain a million of Jews. Alat Mata Kodesh, the Jewish concept of life would disappear. There'd be no Pesach, and there'd be no Sukkot, and there'd be no Shavuos, and there'd be no Rosh Hashanah, and there'd be no Yom Kippur, and there'd be no Jews. And this is the miracle, that there has never been a moment in the history of the Eretz Yisrael, the state of Israel, call it what you wish, when there has not been a Jewish presence al Admat HaKodesh. Where will you find this? Sefer HaMitzvah, the Rambam, Mitzvah Kuf Nun Gimel. And you look in to the Rambam's formulation. Who shetzivani yit barach l'kadesh chadashim l'achshov chadashim chadashim manz v'shanim v'zuhi mitzvah kiddush chodesh v'hu amah yitaleh. This is what God said, chodesh hazeh lechem rosh chadashim. And the Rambam goes on, and avo mitzvah zu lo yaseh oto liolam zilat beit begon hagadol levad uberet Yisrael levad. It has to be a beit hagadol, it has to be an Eretz Yisrael. And ela b'yekat zorch u'b'heder ha'chachamim b'Eretz Yisrael, based upon the Gemara Sanhedrin, that if the chachamim had to leave Eretz Yisrael, then they can still make the calendar in Chutz La'aretz, but they have to be smuchim ish mi pi ish from the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. And then he goes on to explain that nowadays it's the Sanhedrin, it's the Beit HaGadol of Eretz Yisrael, who made a permanent calendar, v'akviyotam nismach. And we depend upon this permanent calendar. It's not what we have done. The cheshbon that we make is liguil milta, just to uncover what they have decided. V'hevin zema od, and understand this deeply. And then you come. V'ani osif lecha biyur. Ilu efshad derech mashal shebnei Eretz Yisrael ya'adru me'Eretz Yisrael chalila lekel me'asot zot ki hu hiftiach shelo yimacher otot ha'uma mikol v'kol. Wow! That, God forbid, if you can imagine that there would be a time when the Jews would not be in Eretz Yisrael, there'd be no minyan here, no kehila, then the whole calendar would disappear. And this is what God promised us, that the calendar will remain eternal, the holidays will remain eternal, Shalom yidach mimenu midach. So we must always understand, and this was Ben Gurion's biggest mistake, because if you know anything about the history of modern Zionism, Ben Gurion stressed Jewish history comes to a halt, as if to speak, with Churban Habayit, and Jewish history picks up again with modern Zionism, with Bilu, with Chobeve Tzion, with Chibat Tzion, with Theodor Herzl, and in the secular schools in Israel when the state was formed, there was just one big blank from Churban Habayit until the late 1800s. And of course, that mistake gave birth to a culture that is so alien to understanding who we are, what we are, and this, of course, is what gave birth to the Tshuva movement, Al Admat HaKodesh. And never forget the words of the most famous Baal Tshuva of all, Uri Zohar. When he came in Aliyah, Uri Zohar was Mr. Israel. Like, I don't know, an American entertainer. Do you have anyone today that is so famous? When I was growing up, I don't know, there was Frank Sinatra, let's say. Frank Sinatra, Bach, everyone knew the name. A great friend of the Jews, by the way, a great friend of the State of Israel. And Uri Zohar was Mr. Israel, Mr. Entertainment, the movies, until today, classics. And raised so Israeli, he and Eric Einstein. And then it all happened, the floodgate opened. And I don't want to go into details with the story, but it had all these questions. And he was told there's someone who lives in Al-Yad Rechavya, Shari Chesed, from the old city, Zilberberg. There's a Zilberberg Talmud Torah of England. These are English origins, English people. And go and ask him your questions. And Uri Zohar came. It's a true story. He wrote about it in his autobiography, but it was interviewed because this didn't leak out until much later. And Uri Zohar came, and he comes into Rabbi Zilberberg, and he starts shooting all these questions at him. And Rabbi Zilberberg says to him, "I'm not going to ask any of your questions. I want you to spend the Shabbos with me, on condition you don't drive," tying together what I said an hour and a half ago. Uri Zohar, what's the big deal to stay in a hotel? The man was a millionaire. You stay in a hotel, Shari Chesed, you have five beautiful hotels within walking distance. At that time you had, at least 5 hotels. And Uri Zohar comes in with all his questions, and at the end of Havdalah, he says, "All my questions are gone. I have no more questions." And when Uri Zohar spoke, he said, "My education robbed my greatest gift from me, the gift of Torah, the gift of the history of our people, the gift of the survival of Torah. No one ever taught me about it in the finest secular schools that I attended." And this, of course, gave birth to a tremendous Shiva movement. The story of how Uri Zohar became frum leaked out. No one ever knew the real story. But in 1988, there was a tremendous tragedy. A bus was blown up by the Palestinians traveling near Yericho, and as I recall, Rabbi Zilberberg's daughter and 2 grandchildren were killed on that bus. And everyone noticed that Uri Zohar was in the house of mourning every day. And people asked him, "What's your connection to Rabbi Zilberberg?" And that's when the story came out. It's an amazing story. And that story continues until today, because Uri Zohar chazah b'tshuva, his teenage children, I mean, it's an amazing story. They were older children, his wife, who didn't know what hit her. I mean, you just think for a moment, you're married to Mr. Israel, and pitom, Shabbat, kashrut, parat mishpacha, he chazah b'tshuva. They had more children afterwards. His sister-in-law, Alona Einstein, Zichrono Tzadeket Levracha, she chazra b'tshuva, and she did so much good. The stories that came out, the Milat Chesed that she ran for colors, and she told the story. She was from Riga. Joseph HaTzadik Mendelovich is from Riga. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, the 6th Rebbe, lived in Riga. I was in Riga in 85 for the Mossad. I could still feel the Rebbe's presence there. It was unbelievable. And she told the story how when she went in Aliyah, she was a little girl, late 30s, lucky to get out. And this Jew came over and gave a bracha and said to her, "Yizolt alamo gedenken as he had Du bist a Yiddish tachta. You should always remember that you're a Jewish daughter." And of course, she grew up here. Long since forgot, secular. And what Uri Zohar began brought her back, belay for nefesh. Husband had to divorce her. Einstein couldn't live with. I wrote songs later that my best friends left me. Chazru b'tshuva. It's in the song. You gotta hear it to believe it until today. And that Jew who told her that you should always remember that you're a Jewish daughter, he came in Aliyah from Russia when the gates opened. He was in his 90s, and they were reunited in Bnei Brak. The little girl he had blessed, and this elderly Jew who retained Yiddishkeit despite the communists. Amazing stories. Gentlemen, anyone here will learn how to do movies, to do a proper job. There's so much to be done. So let me reiterate. What have we done today? First of all, we dealt with Chabad and the whole question of inviting people Friday night when you're not going to drive. Very fascinating question. And very fascinating, this person, Talmud Chacham, and I give him credit because he quotes all the tshuvot he quotes in detail. It's a kuntres that he put out evidently for a daughter's wedding. And he quotes in detail that the person can read it. Excuse me. You don't have to have any sperm in front of you. It's all in there. And the way he approaches it, very, very novel, very interesting. I invite coming from the Balei Tshuva sitting in front of me. Baruch Hashem. I don't like the word Balei Tshuva because Balei Tshuva is someone like myself. If I sinned, and of course I can be a Baal Tshuva, I learned, I know, I saw Gedolei Yisrael. Today, the average Jew doesn't know anything. It's not making him a Baal Tshuva. It's bringing him to his heritage. There's a big difference between the two. So I apologize for using the word Balei Tshuva. But for those of you who found your heritage a little bit later in life, I'm curious to your reaction to that kuntres. Then we finished out the Holocaust, and I made the point of the dignity of the Orthodox Jew, Gam Kelech V'Geitz HaMavet. And then I introduced the next major topic, which flows from the Holocaust, of course, Aliyah. It picks up on everything that the Eim HaBanim Smicha said. And I explained to you there are many questions that we have to deal with. No other problem confronts us daily in the Torah world than the question of Zionism. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to deal with it in great detail and present a religious Zionist platform that I hope is second to none. So I said a few words about continuity, about always wanting to go back. I opened your eyes to a Yerushalmi. I opened your eyes to the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvah that the Rebbe quoted time and again. And take a look at the miracle that there never was a moment in close to 1800 years of exile, 1900 years of exile, when there wasn't a community here, Allah HaKadosh. Next week, or next time in this class, I'll go into it a little deeper and develop the pre-Zionist concepts. Now, where do we stand for next week? What has been decided? Sunday, Sempo Sungihara, and Monday, paper clips. Does that sound reasonable? Okay.
Is the road going to be possible?
Well, I've shown the Rav a number of years. I don't want to bore them again with the Rav, but the Rav would take both days. You know what? Battle it out and tell me tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll act on it. I brought with me in my office now a simple Sugihara, paper clips, and the Rav, and it's all DVDs. I have many videos, but fine. Next, I just want, Michael, just wait 1 second. This is for Yitz. Tell him this is from Normie Ansel. It
Did
says.
You know the tshuva that you spoke about?
The tshuva is right here.
On driving?
Yeah. You want to borrow it?
Yeah.
You can borrow it, but I must.
Okay.
Yeah, just.
I'll copy and give it back to you.
You give it back to me. Here it is. It's a kuntres. It's very fascinating, and I can't dismiss it. You understand? I can't dismiss it.
So this is all for Yitzhak?
Yeah, that's for Yitzhak. That's for you, gentlemen. I have here a treasure. 1 second.
Now's the time to give it out if you wish.
This is a letter from David Ben-Gurion, it's in his handwriting, to the Shah HaChinuch Zalman Oran. I believe he was a Mapamnik, and it's from 1956. And I wrote on the side in my handwriting, which I try to make a little bit clearer than David Ben-Gurion, and it's a fabulous letter where you see already that in 56 Ben-Gurion had enough seichel to understand that a chiloni chinuch is not sufficient. And it's a fabulous letter where he says, I'm not afraid of a little religious education. He says, chinuch ivri doesn't just mean that we teach them how to speak Hebrew, but it means we have to go back to our makara, to our sfarim, and we have to enable them to understand it. And the more they understand it, they will appreciate the continuity of the Jewish people. And the last line is unbelievable. V'yavtiach zikato letochelet amo b'moledet. And if we give them this feeling, it will connect them all the more to the Holy Land. My dear students, next Sunday, Monday, at regular class times, is the Rakefet Lag BaOmer Film Festival. I'm dependent upon the help of the technical crew here to set up the video and Be'ezrat Hashem right here in this classroom. Then there is one more Sunday and Monday which I teach, and then the magic date of June 1st is upon us, and that tells me that I can no longer teach in the Kollel because your minds are everywhere but the classroom as you prepare for life. And my mind will be 10,000 miles away in Beverly Hills. However, there's one little problem with all this. It's a very tense time for myself with all that. Everything with the book and everything with the car. You know, a minor. My mother is in the hospital. So please be mitpalel Yehudit Bat Peshet Tzipper. I know it's very hard for you to pronounce, and my grandsons look at me. It's a Yiddish nomen. Peshet Tzipper. K-Ayin Samech Ayin Aleph. In Yiddish, Tzipper Tzadi Yud Pei Aleph. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. If anyone wants a copy of this historic letter, it's yours for the.